All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Strength Academy Podcast. Once again, Mundo's here, and I'm joined by Grayson.
How's it going, everybody?
And so we wanted to talk a little bit about Worlds, but I think we're going to hold off until it's actually all done and over with. There's still a lot going on, and there's still quite a bit of lifting to be done. So far, it's been pretty exciting. There's been a lot of like good lifts and some pretty good moments overall, but we'll delve into those probably next week. But for now, we kind of wanted to talk about a little bit surrounding unconventional training methods, what they are, some of the ones that we use or that we might consider a little bit unconventional, and then how these kind of like play into the everyday programming that goes on for our gym and our athletes. So let's go ahead and just start off considering like what we think is conventional, first of all. Like, so what's the normal range of things that people normally do in a weightlifting gym?
Yeah, so this idea was kind of spurred on by a conversation I had with somebody a while ago, and they kind of made the assertion like, oh, it seems like you guys do some kind of unconventional stuff over there. And I'd never really thought of anything that we do as particularly outside the bounds of normal training. But then again, I don't have a whole lot of experience training with other people.
Sure.
And doing anything other than like a cursory look at, you know, a programming example online. So I think that we can say that conventional training can probably be defined as a linear periodization. So there's probably going to be, for most people, distinct training blocks using, you know, 3 and 4 week mesocycles. To build out a macro cycle, usually like 12 to 16 weeks. I think we can say that is pretty much like standard across the board.
Right.
But, and then exercise use, I mean, that's the thing is I think it's going to be really hard to say what a conventional exercise is or a conventional training program is, because I think that there's a lot of variation between people. But of course, you're going to have snatch, power snatch, same variance for clean, same variance for jerk, some sort of pulling exercise.
Yeah.
I think maybe like speed pulls or like fast, you know, explosive pulls or extensions are kind of more standard than, so like if you had to think of like what's kind of a basic thing, it would probably be more pulls and less deadlifts and less high pulls.
Okay.
But anything within that realm, and that's what's so hard. And then back squat, front squat, probably push press. I mean, yeah. I'd say that those are kind of like the block of traditional things. But a lot of the time you see, you know, Cal Strength using box squats, or I know MASH has played with banded power cleans a little bit. So you kind of see everybody's doing the same exercises, because really, like, there's not that many exercises for weightlifting.
Sure.
It's just different ways of approaching them. So like the validity of, so like some things that we'll do that are just variants on that is, we're starting to make a lot of people do, barefooted back squats or flat soled back squats occasionally.
Right.
And that's based on a recommendation from a PT that we work with, that always doing all of your squats in your weightlifting shoes can kind of create some imbalances. So she's been recommending that. So that might be an example of like something that's a little unconventional that we throw around. But what do you think? What would you say like the conventional training system is? Because it wouldn't be what is put out in like the USAW level one, because that's kind of an outline. That's not really a program style, yeah. Right?
I think when I think of like conventional training methods, I think about the way that the programs are set up, the types of exercises and the days that you do them on. So like snatch is always on Monday, or, you know, cleans are always on like the third session. And then you always have like a heavy, like third or fifth day or whatever, depending on how many days are in your training cycle. So like you'll snatch one day and then have a variation of like a power, and then you'll clean jerk the next day, and then have another variation of a power pressing movement, things like that. And then on the fifth day, maybe have like a combination of snatch and clean and jerk, and then like a squat and stuff like that. So like that's, to me, that's the kind of the way conventional training is set up. So like it's kind of like bodybuilding used to be, where it was Monday's international chest day and Friday's leg day, and then, you know, in between you have like back and buys and chest and tries and stuff like that. So like conventional training to me looks more like that. Like, it's real systematic, real, typical of what a training program will look like. Because, like, if you go to other gyms and things like that, they have the same kind of setup, like, where they're snatching the first day of the week, or they're working on clean and jerks, like, in the middle of the week, and then maybe, like, a heavy combination of the lifts at the end of the week.
So there's usually that there's a structure to the week.
Yeah, and that's from a programming perspective. The actual exercise, like what I consider to be more conventional, is mostly just sticking to the classical lifts, like no variation in positions off the floor or from the hang, more just off the floor stuff, like, you know, snatches and regular clean and jerks, and then just typical back squatting. So, like, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying, like, this is the typical conventional way that you see things set up. And that's how most training programs are. They'll have, like, some kind of squat. They'll have a classical lift and then a pushing or pulling variation in the movement within the week. And then, you know, spread out in different ways throughout the whole training cycle. So, and then that typical 3 weeks on, maybe 1 week back down. And then continuing that for maybe three more blocks of that, it's leading up to a peaking cycle. And that's how I, like, view conventional training.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, and this is where it gets really hard to define, because I think that it might actually be kind of unconventional to see only snatch and clean and jerk from the floor for a whole 12 weeks.
Okay, that's
probably because true, usually, yeah. Like, a lot of times you do see, you know, variety or hangs or complexes, that sort of right. thing. So I think that it kind of really depends, you know, like it having all lifts from the floor. So I don't know if you can say that there is one conventional training right. modality and just that there's different areas of emphasis.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is just like what's conventional to somebody else might be different because it really boils down to what you know and what you're used to.
Yeah.
Because if you're used to one thing, everything else is going to seem unconventional. And if you are used to doing things a specific way or not doing things a specific way, it's going to be unconventional to look at all these other training programs and see just like that. If you did all off-the-floor lifts for the whole training cycle, that might be a little weird. Like, it might be a little unconventional for you if you're used to doing variations all the time.
Yeah, and then, you know, the same thing goes if you're – you know, doing mostly heavy snatch, clean and jerk from the floor, and squat. So if you're doing kind of more of a Bulgarian thing, then almost anything is unconventional compared to that approach.
Right, right.
So I think that, you know, I mean, I kind of feel like it's probably a good thing to when people kind of have an impression that you're doing something a little bit outside the ordinary, because it means that, you know, you're kind of playing with new ideas. And I think that's probably what it is, because if we stumble across something that we think looks interesting or potentially valuable, we'll, you know, throw stuff at the wall to see if it sticks. So we'll play with some stuff. I definitely have been drifting more towards, and again, this is conventional or unconventional depending on what system you're looking at or what group of gyms or athletes you're looking at, but doing a lot of bodybuilding work, I think, is something that we emphasize that I consider to be kind of like a standard thing to do.
Sure.
But a lot of people don't necessarily prescribe or buy into doing a lot of higher repetition bodybuilding work. So I think that can be an area where, you know, just depending on what your influences are, you know, right. is it, you know, would bodybuilding count as, you know, an unconventional training methodology, or would that kind of count as the most traditional because it used to be the same sport, basically?
Right. And it really did used to be like integrated into the sport. Like, they would have weightlifting competitions and then have like figure competitions right after, back in the day, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it used to be, you know, you do a three lift meet and then do a pose off at the end. And I think that, I don't know. So maybe there isn't such thing as like a conventional training program. Maybe there's, you know, certainly if you're not using periodization, that's fairly unconventional.
And what is considered periodization?
So that's, you know, if you're looking at a 12-week training program, traditional kind of block periodization, which I think is kind of the standard as far as programming templates look is starting with higher repetitions and building work capacity, and then moving to mid or lower range repetitions and working on strength, and then spending time working on peaking for the lifts. So kind of having a base building phase, a strength building phase, and then a competition prep phase, and not kind of trying to stay competition ready year round. Some kind of counter examples to this would be like Louis Simmons' conjugate method, where there's always a volume day, a max effort day, and a speed day.
Right.
So that's kind of like an unconventional way to do that. And I've seen some people play with trying that approach with weightlifting, where you kind of vary whatever your max effort exercise is for the week. I think that there's definitely something to that. I don't particularly like a weekly change of exercises, because I feel like you don't get enough time to practice them.
Sure.
But I think that, yeah, so when I say like conventional, I'm talking about, you know, we're going to do fives, then threes, and then singles.
Right.
Or, you know, build up a base of tens. But I think that, I don't know, it's almost like too dogmatic to label anything as conventional or non-conventional.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the thing is like, if we started saying like that one thing was more conventional over the other or less unconventional, then we get into the field of like the straw man argument type things, where we're saying like most weightlifting coaches don't do this, or most weightlifting coaches do this. And like we don't want to really get into that, because like we just had that conversation about
the
starting
can't.
Strength thing, because like one of the arguments was that weightlifters don't deadlift, and that's absolutely not true, because we deadlift all the time. We just do variations that are going to carry over into our lifts, like snatch and clean deadlifts. So like maybe that's considered unconventional, like in some aspects.
Well, and the training style that he was advocating in that was, you know, an unconventional style where you prioritize deadlifting 700 pounds before you prioritize clean and jerking 400. And that is a bit of an unconventional approach. But that's not to say that it might not work for somebody.
Yeah, that's the thing, is just like it probably would work for somebody. There is somebody out there that program would probably, they would thrive under that.
Well, and that kind of brings me back to something that I oftentimes think about, which is not, you know, a lot of times coaches are always trying to say, you know, this is what we've developed and I have the answer to solving this problem. Sure. That is you lifting more weight. And I oftentimes wonder, like, if it's how much the day-to-day aspects of the program matter versus long-term practice of the movements. So like, if you know, if you're doing drop snatches versus snatch balances, does that make any sort of difference on the career length of an athlete? You know, like I oftentimes wonder, like, if they're like, I don't think that there's like a secret exercise selection, or like there's a, you know, special way of doing any one thing, because especially, you know, watching some of the lifts at Worlds, it's easy to forget, but some people look fairly, there are a lot of outliers out there. There's a lot of people doing things that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily try to get your brand new beginner to try to emulate, or things that are downright technical errors, but they're able to make it work.
Right.
So, you know, to say that there's only one technique that fits all is to try to put all your athletes in the same box. And I think that if you keep an open mind and you don't just get into a, we have to do tens, fives, threes like LSUS, or right, we have to do sets of five all the time as heavy as we can, and like that starting strength camp, or, you know,
well, do you think that applies to like techniques as well? Because like the Colombians seem to have across the board this idea that you have to have this real wide jerk, right? And they do that by adjusting off the clean into their re-racking into that wide jerk position, and they all seem to do it, and they all seem to do it like fairly consistently.
Yeah.
So like that seems like something that's conventional for them but unconventional for the rest of us.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure that comes back to an athlete or coach or particular group that kind of had an idea of, well, reduce the total movement that you have to do to get overhead. It might come from if people like generally have longer arms, like if that's kind of a more typical build, sure, that you need to shorten the jerk. I'm not really sure where that comes from, but that's a perfect example of, that's not a very conventional jerk technique, but that's only because it's our perspective,
right,
is of a, you know, place where we don't really readjust for the jerks that way. I'm sure there's a lot of Colombians going, why isn't everybody doing this?
Right.
This is a better way to jerk. So I think that, you know, they're thinking that there's like a secret answer. Like I kind of think that if you find like exercise variation is very good for like, you know, oh, you're kind of weak at this part of the lift. But if, as long as you're improving that part of the lift, I'm not really sure it matters what kind of exercise you're doing. Like if it's block or hang, are you practicing the snatch from the knee position?
Right.
You know, and there might be certain merits for one versus the other, depending on situation or context, but that's it. It's all dependent on situation and context. And I think that, you know, maybe the most unconventional thing you can do is try to pull from everybody. Because, right, you know, we never really do, we're always tweaking. We're always looking for new info. We're always trying out new technical cues or body positions, you know, trying to optimize the things that we are doing. Right. So, like, I kind of think that, you know, people want to systematize things.
Right, right.
Exactly. And that makes more sense because you just say, these are the ways that we do it. This is how I teach every beginner. This is how I teach every person coming in. Whereas I feel like we do a lot more experimentation where it's, I play with, when I get new people, I play with new stuff.
Right.
Because they don't know any different.
Yeah.
So if there's a way that I can try to get them to, you know, learn a snatch, or I have an idea or I see a thing, I'm always going to try that thing out. Right.
And I think I'm more systematic in the way I approach like teaching new people. It's like, I want them to know these specific things. And then beyond that, it's not as, you know, important what they learn, but they have to have like specific fundamentals down. Like I want them to be able to know how to breathe properly and brace for lifts, and then get used to the idea of being in certain positions. And then if they're not able to get into those positions, then working on whatever's required to get started with those positions. Like we had a new guy that came in and he had some hip hinge mobility challenges, and you know, he's gonna have to do some work as far as like mobility and stretching and some of his flexibility just to be able to do an air squat. And like that's the reality that some people come into the gym with, is just like they're used to either a specific way of living, or they have a sedentary lifestyle where they're sitting at a desk or they're sitting at a, you know, computer for a long period of time, and then they build up these motor patterns that are just completely detrimental to weightlifting. And then you have to kind of work with those people to get them to a baseline of where they're able to do the fundamental stuff. Like, so like they have to take a different approach for that stuff. But like, I like to systemize, like knowing that they know how to breathe and brace, because that's ultimately a safety issue for me. Like I need to know that they know how to control their breath and their bracing. And then just being able to do a squat, like a regular squat, is highly valuable to me as a start, like a starting point.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So I think that, we're in agreement on that, and that I, especially, you know, just this last year, really, really focusing on having people pay attention to how they're breathing. Like even like one really small thing that I've changed my approach on is I'm trying to get everybody to set the majority of their breath through their nose.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really trying to get that kind of ingrained with how I want people to breathe for things. And it's okay to top off with a bit of air from the mouth.
Sure.
But I've really found that, you know, one of the things that I think is a really huge problem, especially in the snatch, is that people rush. They try to move too fast off the yeah. floor and they lose balance.
Yeah.
And what I've kind of found is that, you know, the idea that taking deep inhalations through your nose calms you down, that if you get set in your start position and you take that long inhale, you're going to have a better trunk stability, because when you gasp through your mouth, you tend to just breathe through your chest.
Right.
So making sure that you're taking a breath with your diaphragm. But also, it just calms you down that little bit before you come off the floor, and it can be a really effective way. So, I mean, we've been playing with doing breathing drills. Nobody's broken 2 minutes on our Wim Hof warm-up this month, but hopefully we'll see if somebody can hold their breath for starting to cross that line. But I think that, yeah, breathing and bracing, like, I think having a system of, like, these are the important things that you want to see. But then when it comes to teaching the snatch, you know, once you establish overhead squat, I think, you know, there's, you can start people with press to overhead squat. You can start people with muscle snatch. You can start people with full snatch if they're one of the million that walks in able to do it first day. And I think that, you know, so you have to be willing to, I just think that everything needs to be really flexible. Because, like you said, like the new guy that came in to check things out, we can't use the same beginner program that we do for somebody who has the mobility but not the experience. Right. You know, so you've always got to be changing things on a day to day, and that's you know, I guess one thing that we do or I do at least that it seems like a lot of people write all 12 weeks of a program all at once.
Sure.
And I tend to write it week to week. And then for a lot of beginners, for the first couple weeks, we're doing it day to day because I'm looking at what happened yesterday. Yeah. What do I want to work on next time? And, you know, so a lot of times, you know, brand new people at the gym get a handwritten piece of paper from me, just saying, this is what we're going to practice today based on what I'm thinking about right now and what happened last time. And, like, there's a little bit of that wiggle room there.
Right. What I'm curious about is, so, like, what if, because, you know, people show up to those USAW seminars to learn how, like, go through the level one and learn how to coach and things like that and learn the lifts. What happens if they show up and they're completely immobile? Like, what if it's just some dude that just showed up and is like, I want to learn how to lift, but there's nobody around me, and I'm going to go to this USAW seminar, but he can barely get into, you know, a decent air squat and much less like overhead squat position. Like, where do they start those people? Or do they just assume that you're already well versed in weightlifting and that's why you're trying to be?
I don't know what the exact protocol is at the USAW meets addressing that sort of thing, but it's probably showing them mobility exercises. But, you know, I remember there was a few people that weren't able to do full snatches at my level one.
Oh, really?
Okay. And they just power snatched.
Okay.
And so they just try to
work around it?
Yeah, so you just kind of start them where they're at.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I think that kind of getting back to the conversation of what is and isn't a conventional exercise, I think that thinking in that way is what kind of limits the scope of things, of problems you can solve.
Sure.
Because, like, another thing that I've been really focusing on lately is addressing weaknesses in people's feet has been, like, a thing that I've been thinking about a lot lately and, like, spotting in a lot of athletes.
Sure.
And if the base of support is weak, then the ankle isn't going to track correctly. The squat isn't going to be as stable because you're not able to keep the arch in your foot, or there's just instability there.
Right.
So I've been really making sure that I'm trying to get people lifting in their socks for things like single leg deadlifts and stuff, where you have to really feel that balance. Mm-hmm. And even warming up for squats or doing barefoot squatting as an accessory exercise or primary strengthening exercise, because, like we've said, the back squat is really an accessory movement. So if it's going to benefit the strength in their feet, but it means not squatting as heavy, it might end up carrying over more if there's increased stability at the bottom of that squat. So I think if you're, you know, starting a club or working with athletes, always be trying to find new information. And I like to look for areas that people disagree personally. Like, I really like to see people, like, I'll get in the weeds and just read comments of people arguing back and forth about technique, or, you know, writing articles back and forth, and try to find as many different viewpoints as you can, because I mean it's trying to find, you know, the best approach, but that's not going to be the same for everyone. So you want to have as many tools in that toolkit and as many different ideas in your head as possible, so that you have, like, a huge wealth of things to pull from.
And I think, well, one of the reasons that's important is because every body is different. Like, everybody's individual body is different. Like, the way they're set up, the way their limb lengths are, like, their torso length, the way that they squat is different. So having one way of doing things and making that your conventional approach may not always work. So that's why I think it's better to be, like Grayson said, just have an open mind toward other, you know, modalities of fitness. And one thing that we've been kind of, he's been playing with more than I have, but I've done it before, is just like natural movement. That's like crawling around, things like that. So like a lot of that stuff, a grown adult, you don't see them crawling around on the floor very often. It's mostly just children. But children have and keep this ability to be able to sit in a low squat position naturally because of those positions that they're normally in. And an adult, you don't see them crawling around or climbing things or, you know, doing those types of like natural movement, climbing across something, walking across a balance beam, like barefoot, like those kinds of things. And I'm not saying they don't have any value, but I'm saying that they have value for some people, and some more than others, because some people don't maintain that stuff naturally. They have to work at it. So, you know, some of the stuff that he's been playing around with, like, has been kind of like bear crawls and like Frogger and things like that. And those have been helping, I think, his mobility. Because I've watched him progress over the past couple of weeks from having hard time sitting into a regular squat and then getting to a much better position mobility-wise. So, like, that's something that he's wanted to focus on and concentrate on. And I've watched that progress happen. But it's just something that he's embraced, because if he would have just said, well, the only thing I'm going to do is snatch and clean and jerk to get better at snatching and clean and jerking, it might not have worked if he didn't accept that outside perspective.
Yeah, so that's a pretty good example. Like, yeah, so I've been playing with doing some of the kind of natural movement, like bear crawls, like that sort of stuff, because my problem has been always that I was pretty rehearsed at snatching and clean and jerking, but like improvisational movement and coordination is never something that I've been great at.
Okay.
And I think that just kind of improving that kind of baseline stuff, I'm curious to see if it carries over into that snatch and clean and jerk, and just being able to spend time in positions that are usually uncomfortable, or even honestly, sometimes I require a load to be able to get into certain positions. Yep. And that kind of bothers me. So I think that you can, if you're paying attention and you're kind of looking to all of these different fitness domains, like we've implemented a lot more cardio work for people.
Yeah.
And that's really helping people's lifting along. We're always kind of pulling from, you know, some of these ideas that are coming out of CrossFit or MoveNat or these other kind of things, just to kind of see what works for people. And I think that it benefits our athletes in that, you know, there's enough variation that they're kind of not getting stagnant or burned out doing essentially the same program week after week. But also we're always just looking for holes and weaknesses, you know,
and like low hanging fruit.
Will wide stance squatting benefit somebody who has a hard time, you know, with mobility? Mm-hmm. If they work to challenge that position more so and open their hips up a little bit more, how is that going to carry over to their lifts? This person's quads seem weak, so maybe we should do some bodybuilding work to try to build up the size of the quads and then hit narrow squats after we build up some size to kind of build up that quad strength.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of different things that you can do, and if you kind of limit your scope to only snatch and clean and jerk, or you know, you only do 70% for these, you know, for the first like 9 weeks of a training cycle, you know, so you're staying too light, or if you're going too heavy, like there's always going to be problems when you do things only one way.
Right,
so
right.
We might do a training cycle where we do a lot of light lifts when we're working on pushing up leg strength or pulling strength.
Right.
But then we also might have training cycles where we stay above 80% almost all the time. And we kind of vary those things throughout the year so that we're never just doing one kind of domain. So we always have, you know, this one's, we're working on upper body strength for this chunk, but there's always snatch and clean and jerk within that.
Right. Right.
And I think that, it's just hard for me to imagine not trying to figure out new ways of doing things or different approaches or different ways to conceptualize things.
Right.
Because we had an experience this weekend where we were working on, we've been working on jerk positioning with one of our athletes, and she has a tendency to short step her front foot. And the only thing we did differently within that training session is we told her to focus on what position her shin was in and not what position her foot was in. And it immediately made a huge difference. And it's the exact same result that we were trying to get, but just shifting the language to place your shin here versus place your foot right here is all it took to make that adjustment. And I think it's really interesting because if, you know, we had just kept hammering, move your foot out, we would have been stuck. But because we were kind of thinking outside the box or changing up the way that we were talking about it, you know, so you've got to try to, if you're saying something to an athlete and it isn't clicking, you got to find as many ways to say that thing as possible. And the more ideas you're exposed to and the more kind of different theories and approaches that you get, you just have more like words at your disposal to kind of get that person into the shape that you want.
Yeah, and that's true because like the way that we interpret information on an individual basis is varied exponentially, like almost to infinity. Like the way that each of us understands something can be, you know, so different. And the way that you explain one thing to somebody doesn't necessarily mean that it'll translate that same way to everybody else. And so like hammering that cue, if you're yelling something at an athlete or telling them something to change something and they're not getting it, it's not because they're incapable of understanding. It's because you're not explaining it to them in a way that they're capable of achieving the result. So like I think that it's important that we as coaches learn to communicate to each individual as opposed to just saying you're not listening to my cue, because it's more like ego driven that way. It's more like, oh, like you're not paying attention to what I'm telling you. It's like, no, they're just not understanding the way that I'm explaining it. So it has to be explained a different way. You have to be able to portray it or explain it in a different aspect. Like not everybody understands everything in the same way. That's why I think like college is such a hard gig to kind of get through. It's just like, here's this curriculum of stuff and we're just going to lay it out and everybody's going to understand it the same way. And if you pass, you pass. If you fail, you fail. And that's up to you.
Yeah. But
like not everybody learns that way. Not everybody's just like this, oh, I'm going to read these five things that you suggested and then I'll be able to pass the test. Not everybody works that way. Some people are more hands-on. Some people are more visual learners. Some people have that auditory learning. You know, they're more. Some people are more kinesthetic. So like sometimes people might need you to display what you're trying to get them to achieve. Show them exactly what you want them to do in that lift. Or, you know, maybe they need a better explanation or a different explanation, or maybe they just need you to fix them in while they're in that position so they know where they're supposed to be at. So like there's a different array of ways that people learn. And so if you only have one aspect of showing them that this is what you want them to do, then it's to your detriment. Like you're not giving yourself the full potential of toolbox items that you can use to make a lifter better if you're not open to like some of these other methods of doing things.
Yeah, and that's I think really important for coaches, because some people, like you said, are going to need you to put your hands on them and adjust them into position. Yeah. Others will need the conversation to explain what's happening.
Right. Some people just need you to show them.
And some people need you to show them.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, so just like you need all of those tools in your toolbox for a coach when you're writing programs, you need to know, okay, well, if position loss at the sticking point on the way up from the clean is the problem, what exercises fall into the category of things that fix that? And there might be 25 of them.
Right.
It might be do more front squats at a weight that breakdown doesn't happen. So do lighter front squats, but 10 sets of three at a weight that doesn't happen.
Sure.
There might be doing squats bottom up from the blocks or from pins. You might get out of here, pickle. You might have you know, somebody do partial squats where they go halfway down, or pause squats. So there might, so you've got a lot of different ways that you can solve that problem of somebody tipping forward on the way up from the clean. And I don't think that you can really say that there's a conventional way to solve that problem, because I think that just like anything, you want as much creativity to your problem solving as you can get. Right. And a lot of times how you choose which exercise you're going to use to address a specific problem is largely just kind of intuition on the coach's part. What do you think is going to work, and what has worked in the past, and what have you read? And the more information and data you have, you can have a better educated guess of how you're going to try to solve that problem. But if you're, you know, paralyzed by this doesn't fit with some of the other things that I've done or the other things that I see coaches doing, then you might hesitate to make a selection that might look weird. Like maybe, you know, maybe having somebody Zercher squat instead. Like you might have a feeling like, I think Zercher squats will help this person.
Right.
But if all you're doing is you're like, but nobody else is doing Zercher squats, is it crazy to do it? You're going to be hesitant and you might miss an opportunity to do something really good for that athlete.
Right.
But I think that it comes down to that you can't be afraid of making a choice that doesn't work out. Like you can't be afraid of saying, we're going to try this exercise, and then 2 weeks later go, okay, so we're not going to do that anymore. Yeah. And I think that, and I'm really open with a lot of my athletes. You know, I've done things where I've picked a lift from a certain position because I thought it would help with a specific issue. We try it on that first day of the new block. Okay, well, that, I don't think that's doing what I want it to do, so we're going to do something different next week. And I'll freely tell people when it's like, oh, well, that didn't work out, I'm going to go back to the drawing board and I'll have something new next week.
Right.
And I think that, you know, you've got to be willing to take those chances, because every now and then you find something that's, dang, this makes a huge difference for this person.
Right.
And if you are worried about trying to fit into one way of doing things or one way of thinking, you might miss that opportunity. And the worst case scenario is it doesn't work out and you just do something different instead. So I think that, you know, you got to be willing to take those chances. And, you know, I think that's where, you know, trying to get better at reasoning and kind of weighing pros and cons and making rational choices is really important, because just because something's new doesn't mean that it is going to be beneficial. So you've got to kind of weigh, like, okay, does this make sense from a physics perspective? All right, does this make sense from a motivation perspective? Or do we need to, like, is this a logical argument? Like, say, power snatch with bands on.
Right, yeah.
Okay, what's the argument? Okay, you've got to pull the bar faster and you've got to get underneath quicker. Okay. Can that be achieved doing something else? Yeah, you can do a mid-thigh power snatch.
Sure.
Okay, what's the risk-reward? Well, it might change pulling mechanics to use bands on the snatch, whereas the pull mechanics would be the same for the hang snatch.
Right.
So there's... or there might be a safety issue in doing bands over the bar in the snatch. It's harder to bail out. There's less of this... there's kind of, you know, a bigger risk involved in that. And if you're going through and you're kind of systematic with evaluating new exercises, like, okay, is this a risky thing to do? Is this an important, like, is this going to solve the problem that I wanted to solve? And being able to kind of think through things, and then the more experience you have and the more things that you've read and the more varied perspectives you have, you can make a better informed decision when it comes to that. So I think that not being dogmatic is hard to do. And I catch myself doing stuff all the time where it's just like, you know, so I'm constantly evaluating, am I doing this just because it's what I've always done, or am I doing this because it's a good idea and I like the, and it still makes sense? So you have to check in, like we've said, you have to check in with the things that you believe regularly, because you might have a new insight that shows that maybe this isn't the rational decision.
Sure.
So I think that, you know, if you're constantly if you're constantly questioning, you know, why am I making the decisions that I'm making? And you're kind of being a third party observer of yourself. It's really useful for making better educated decisions for your lifters, better training decisions for yourself, but also just like anything that you're doing where you're being a thinking person, you're trying to reevaluate. Because it's that, you know, it's living the examined life. Why did I make that decision? And kind of being that observer of yourself is going to, if you're not reflecting on things, you're probably leaving holes in your training. Because if it's, you know, oh, why did, if the session didn't go well and you just go, oh, today was a bad day, and you don't go, well, why was it a bad day? Were you up late? Like, all those sort of things. So, like, if you can't examine your own actions, it's going to hold back your training. And as a coach, if you can't examine your own beliefs and your, like, systems that you're thinking in,
right,
you can't get new information in.
Yeah, I think that's real. I agree with that completely, because the thing is like, it's almost like America, right? The Constitution was written 300 years ago. We really haven't changed a whole lot. We have cell phones and, you know, drones and all kinds of crazy stuff going on now, and nothing's really changed. So if we took that same approach to weightlifting and we only did what they did in the 1900s for weightlifting, I mean, we probably wouldn't have people lifting the things that they do now, just because, you know, there's better ways to do things. There's always something better, a better way to achieve a result. There's always a new way to achieve a result. There's different ways of going about things. And it's just like, if you just maintain the same mentality toward, well, this is the only way that I've known, and this is the only way that I know works, and you don't take any new, you don't adopt any new approaches, like, then nothing ever changes. It just stays the same the whole time, and you don't always get the results that you want because you're just trying one way of doing things. And we've, I don't know, I've heard it over and over again, but like, the idea of insanity is just doing the same thing over and over again, expecting the same result, right? So if you're constantly doing the same thing with your athletes and they're just not getting it, maybe it's not them, maybe it's you. Like, maybe you're not doing something that you should, as far as like adopting new ideas or taking a new approach or finding a new way to do things. But like, if you're an athlete and something's not working for you, you got to communicate with your coach and say, hey, this I'm not understanding what you're trying to get me to do, and just be upfront. Just be like, maybe is there another way you can explain it, or is there a different way we could try? And if they're open and they're willing to try new things, then you'll probably get a new approach and maybe something that works even better than what you've already been trying. But like, I think that having the mentality of just like, this is the way we've always done things, this is the way it should always be done, is probably not the best idea for progress in any format. So I think that taking a regular look at how you do things, why you do things, and what kind of results you're getting from them is just a good way of saying, you know, this is what works, this is what doesn't, this is what works for this person, this is what doesn't work for that person, or what works for me, what doesn't work for me. And then, you know, just kind of not having a rigid way of doing things, but more like open-minded, not dogmatic, more, you know, a more flowing understanding of like the way that things are dynamic. It's not always set in stone.
Yeah, and I think that looking at one thing that's really helped me with kind of maintaining that is taking a real bird's eye view of the training process, where this is something that I got from Glenn Penley, but he said, you know, training isn't an event, it's a process,
right?
So if you're looking at, you know, the process from high up and you're saying, okay, well, what are the things that we need to accomplish? And you're not just looking at what does today's training look like, but you're looking at what does this lifter's development over the next 3 years look like. That really allows you to kind of say, okay, well, they're just starting out. So whether we're back squatting twice a week or front squatting twice a week, at year three, this isn't going to matter that much. So you can kind of highlight like what are the important areas that you're doing, and that highlighting of what's important will help you make those decisions. So if you can take a step further back and say, okay, well, what's going to happen in the long run? Like, what are the most important things? And it's getting stronger and getting good at the lifts. And then you can kind of start whittling down how you want to accomplish those things. Right. But just looking at it as, oh man, we have to teach power snatch from the power position, right, first, rather than, no, the goal is to get this person to snatch. So the first thing that they do with the barbell is fairly inconsequential as far as their whole career. Sure. So you can try different things there. You can start people at different places. Not everybody has to power snatch from power position first.
Sure.
Not everybody has to, you know, start with a linear progression on back squats. Somebody might be better off goblet squatting for the first month to get the posture down. So there's going to be a variety of things that you can do, especially when it's beginners, but even with advanced athletes, there's going to be a variety of ways you can get them stronger. Do you need to make the training sessions longer? Do you need to split the training sessions up into two sessions? Do you need to add an extra training day to the week? Do they need to train at a higher intensity? Or do they need to get a ton of volume in at a lower intensity? There's right. going to be success on both sides of those. And it's really just about getting to know your athletes and sure. what they're going to respond to. But if you're always stuck in the details and you're never looking at big picture things, it's going to be harder to make those day-to-day decisions, I feel.
Do you think weightlifting should be fun?
I mean,
because, like, there's this whole idea of just, like, you shouldn't do it if you're not enjoying it. Like, enjoy the process. Enjoy the journey. You know, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step type thing. So do you think weightlifting should be fun?
I kind of think that, especially for...
Is that an unconventional thought?
Well, no. I mean, I think that, training should be... I think people sometimes confuse, like, fun with, like, easy or, like, spastic or, you know, unserious.
Right.
But if you're kind of thinking it as it's fun to overcome a challenge and the workout is a challenge presented to you.
Yeah.
And you find it fun to work on things that are difficult for you yeah. or to make improvements on small things or to do something really hard and difficult because of how you feel afterwards.
Right.
I think that's the kind of fun that weightlifting is. I think that your training session, if you're really trying and striving to be the best at weightlifting, there's going to be days that it isn't that way. I think that there's going to be times that, you know, it feels like work because you are having to, I mean, if you're lifting full time, it's, you know, 25, 30 hours a week of your life is dedicated to it. So I think that, there are going to be days that it's not fun right now,
right.
But that's delayed gratification of when it is fun because it's fun after the competition.
Yeah.
And I think that the majority of your training days though, like if you are lifting and you hate every second of it, you kind of have to like figure out why you're doing it. Because right. even during the most brutal of training sessions, I'm usually having a really fun time. Like there's something that I think is really fun about doing squats till your legs are like borderline cramping. Like I think that's a fun thing to do. But that might be that I have a fairly warped perception of what fun is. But yeah, I think that training shouldn't be so super serious all the time. So I think that that's why I'm fine when people talk to each other between sets right. or listen to the music they want to listen to or joke around a little bit, because I think that people work harder when they're in a kind of positive attitude. And if you're having fun with your teammates and it's like a fun practice session and it's kind of buzzing in the gym
right.
and you can kind of feel that energy, I think that's what I mean by fun, is that, you know, everybody's kind of working hard and getting after it and maybe ribbing each other a little bit or, you know, it's not dead quiet, no music, you only lift, like everybody lifts in order.
Right, right.
You know, I think that does kind of take some of the fun out of it. And just because from my perspective, like I've always thought it was fun to train, and so that's how I want it to be for other people.
Right.
I've never been particularly I'm serious when I train, but like I'm always enjoying the time that I'm spending there.
Sure.
So I think it's important that you're not miserable about your training session, but I think that there should be days that it's like, ooh, this is really hard and I sort of don't want to do it, but you know that it's going to result in something.
Yeah. Well, cause, and the reason I bring that up is cause like sometimes environments are unconventional as well. And then, so like the training environment can be conventional or unconventional. So like in a CrossFit gym, everybody's spazzing out for 10 minutes doing, you know, power snatches and chest to bar pull-ups. And they got the music blaring and everybody's huffing and puffing. And it seems like a lot of fun. But like when you're training and weightlifting and you're trying to be precise and you're trying to be technically accurate and you're building strength as well, like there's an aspect of it that to me is fun, but might not be so much to other people. And so like the idea for me of putting, you know, my body weight overhead or more is fun. But some people might consider that to be scary, like, and it's just a different variation of and way of thinking about it. But so like when I approach training, I always think of it as something that I want to do, like something that is fun to me. And the fun lies in the challenge and overcoming the difficulty that entails. So like weightlifting to me is not something that gets easier over time. It gets more difficult over time. And if you're not enjoying like what it is that you're doing in the gym every day, then it's part of that evaluation process of like, why am I doing this? Why do I want to do this? Like, what's the point? And so I think the training environment and the perspective of training, it can be conventional or unconventional too, just depending on how you look at it. But like every training environment is different. You go to some gyms and they don't have music playing. They don't have anybody. There's nobody's talking to each other. They're just sitting there waiting to recover between reps. Like, and then you come to our gym and, you know, we're playing music, we're talking to each other, we're still getting work done, we're still putting in, you know, work, it's getting done, but we're still enjoying the process too. Like, there's still a lot going on the side, like, to keep things interesting. So like maybe that's a little bit unconventional, but like I said, it just depends where you go. Like, so not everybody has the same training environment either, so that can be unconventional as well.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there's a lot of gyms that have a looser training environment than we have. You know, yeah. I feel like we're kind of right in the middle where we have the music on, but it's not blaring.
Right.
You know, people are talking, but they stop talking when you're taking your set.
Right.
You know, so I think that, yeah, there's like a big range in training environment, and it's going to be different for everybody. But yeah, I think that, you know, it should be an enjoyable process to be at the gym. Like, you shouldn't dread going in for your session. But one of the big things that I like to stress with the beginners, and the reason I think so many people's favorite exercise is the snatch.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people,
sure,
like snatch is their favorite.
Yeah.
And the way that I kind of phrase this to beginners, because learning to snatch is very frustrating. But once you learn to snatch, the snatch is even more fun because of how frustrating it was to learn. It's like being able to do a backflip.
Yeah.
Like, it's on par with how cool it is to be able to do a backflip, you know? And once you get it, you're like, oh, I want to do this all the time.
Right.
Because, like, I worked so hard to be able to do this physical talent, and it's fun because of all the hard work you had to put into being able to do it. So, you know, when people are getting discouraged and frustrated with the snatch, I like to, you know, kind of get in there and it's like, well, I mean, you're having a frustrating time with the snatch now, but once you become good enough friends with the snatch that you're able to execute it, this is going to be your favorite lift because of all the hard work you've had to put into being able to do it at all.
Yeah, I think in that aspect, it's a lot like snowboarding, because the first time you do it, it's real frustrating. Like, you fall on your butt a lot and it hurts, and like you take a couple of bumps and bruises. But like once you get the hang of it, like, it really is a lot of fun. It's just that initial learning curve is pretty steep, but it still takes a long time to master. So like you can be pretty decent at it, but you still got to put in a lot of work to be really, really good at it. But it reminds me a lot of snowboarding, because like it's like that. Like, the first time you pick up a barbell and you're trying to learn how to snatch and clean and jerk, especially the snatch, like, it's real technically difficult trying to sit in that bottom position with the bar overhead and maintain good posture and keep the bar close and do all these things. And there's a lot of aspects to it to learn. But once you kind of get the idea, you just start to get into, you know, a groove with it. And I think that over time you do become better at it, But it's just that initial learning curve is just like, it's so hard to overcome.
One of my favorite moments to see from like any new weightlifter in our gym is the first time that they do a snatch and everything goes right.
Right, yeah.
And they just stand up and they're just like, that felt so good. Yeah. It just went right up. I don't understand how I got there, but all of a sudden it was done.
Right.
And it's like, now you get to have fun because now you're not learning anymore. Now you're training.
Right.
And that's when it starts to get fun.
Yeah. Because you're training to repeat that process. And yeah, you're not learning necessarily anymore. And there's still stuff to learn, I'm sure. But like,
well, of course.
But like that transition from knowing what it's supposed to feel like and just trying to get there is that's almost done. Like, so now you're just trying to chase that feeling of like the perfect snatch every time. Like, yeah, it's training, it's a process.
And yeah, it's just so cool to see how excited people are when they get something so difficult for the first time. And that's what I mean when I say it's really fun.
Yeah.
Because like that the high of getting it down for the first time and really just like I didn't miss anything. All of my snatches were all the way down today.
Right.
You walk out feeling like the champ.
Right.
Even if you're just snatching 25 kilos, because it's so hard to get down.
Yeah.
And I think that since we have so many lifters that are recreational adult weightlifters, like those little breakthroughs are what makes, I don't know, the whole thing worth it. Like,
yeah,
that's the fun part, because it just like seeing people's change in self-esteem from the first session to 6 months in is just like, it's so cool to watch.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of makes coaching so fun, is you get to see people really grow and change and adapt as they get better at the sport, and you can see it carry over into other aspects of their life. And it's immensely fun. So I think that training should be a good time. Like, you should be able to have fun in there, but it should be fun because you're enjoying the work, not because you're just goofing off.
Right.
I think the big takeaway from today's conversation, guys, is I'm not sure if there is such a thing as an unconventional approach. I think that there are just different approaches, and being open to as many different approaches as you can is going to net you a better result in the long run. If you're willing to take chances on things and throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks, you're going to have a better rounded team of weightlifters, or you yourself are going to be a little bit more well-rounded if you're willing to play with new ideas and try things that may seem, I mean, as long as they pass, like we said, that logic test of is there a good argument for this? Okay, then we can try it.
Yeah, for sure. All right, folks. Well, that concludes today's episode. If you have any questions, you can get a hold of us at asaweightlifting@gmail.com. Or if you want to DM us on Instagram, it's at Albuquerque Strength Academy. And then, so we definitely want to hear back from you guys. We might do another Q&A episode coming up pretty soon. So be on the lookout for that. Until next time, I don't have anything else, Grayson. Do you?
No, that's it, guys. Go ahead and send us a message if you got any questions, and we'll have some new content, Q&As, and interviews coming to you guys soon.
All right, until next time, lift with no regrets, y'all.